Good morning, everyone. We're going to cut the promo music short because we've got a lot to get through. Just before we do a couple of things, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap. They have a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food, music. Wednesday through to Saturday night, their number is 09-377-3142 or Father Ted's at hotmail.com. Well, just before I get to AJ Wenton, just a bit of a tribute. Yesterday, sadly, we had to bury a man that was a friend to a lot of people in community rugby. He was the president of Eden Rugby, Phil Hall. Absolute champion of a bloke. Phil was started his involvement with Eden back in the 70s as a player. And even then, Phil, if anything needed to be done, it was done. From in the 70s of the great beer strike, him driving his van down to Waikato and bringing tankers of beer up to the Eden Rugby Club, till his involvement in junior rugby, him and the family heavily involved. He was the coach of our 21s and our premiers. He was a committee man. He was made a life member, and he was a president. And one thing I could always say about Phil, always like Phil, just a nice guy. And there was always a firm handshake and a big smile when he met you. So to who, Sue and the family, the sports weekend just sends our condolences to the family. So we might as well start it off with our rugby, and it's a big test match in Wellington tonight. Here to join us, he's been on a lot of radio stations this week, former All Black AJ Wenton. Good morning, AJ.
Yeah, good morning, Peggy. Yeah, it is. At least the sun's shining. It's going to be windy, but just quickly, my condolences to the family of Phil. I met him a couple of times. As you said, a really nice guy, and that sums them up. So, yeah, no, a big weekend of footy. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely. And, of course, last week, you know, yes, you know what it is. It's a test. And All Blacks 24, South Africa 17, a crucial Artie Sevier turnover on his 100th test. And, you know, some great defence and really got the South Africans. They caught the South Africans out early on. But, you know, South Africa, Rassie Erasmus, he went straight to the jugular. He makes 7 changes. He shows his cards early. The All Blacks have made 4 changes. Leroy Carter, a debut for Leroy Carter, and no Rick Ione. So, you know, this test match, to me, you know, it's all there to play for. We have got the unknown, which is South Africa, AJ.
Yeah, well, it's just another typical bash em up front sort of test match. Playing in Wellington, I don't know what the wind's going to do. They say it's going to be roaring, so that'll probably play into contention. But the smart footy, we know the ball will be in the air. But yes, Erasmus doesn't muck about. Made his changes. I said he's kept the same front row. Brought in Lou de Jager out of Expert's gone. The main big thing is the change of the first 5 halfback combination with Reinet coming in and Fernberg. So I think they lacked a bit of cohesion there. So he's made the changes where he sees fit. Not too scared to do it. I see they're bringing the big boy, number 8, Wace, has come in, Khaleesi on the side. So look, a very solid pack again. I think they were disappointed. I thought they made more mistakes than I have seen them, as that's pressure from the All Blacks. Some drop balls, some forward passes, some obstructions. They just looked a bit untidy. On the other hand, the All Blacks came out steaming, and what a great first try to Narawa, and that really set them in the right space. But sadly, they just started to kick a bit too much from my point of view. I thought they could have been a bit more creative, expressive, run the Springbok round a bit more, where they looked dominant. So they came back as we knew they would. The weather wasn't the best, of course. But one thing that did leave an impression at the end of the game was defence held up well. How good is Artie Sevier?
Yep.
Mind you, that box scrum, that put a big question mark on what they can do.
Yeah, that was very, very scary what they could do to our scrum. And I felt the defensive effort of the All Blacks was superb. I still have a major concern, and I'll say it right now to you. We always fall asleep in the first 10 to 15 minutes of the second half. We just have a moment where we let teams back into the game.
Yeah, well, that's a great... They've just got to play... We talk about a full 80, 85, 90-minute game. It's just concentration. I just think we just seem, as you say, we just have to go off the ball and let the opposition in. And you can't let South Africa do that. I think we got away with it against at Eden Park there. Obviously, great to see the record of the Fortress still intact for another day. But I think this is going to be a different attack from the Springboks. I think they'll be a lot more determined. I don't think we'll see those silly little errors. So the All Blacks are going to have to be on the mettle. It's good to see Leroy Carter in. They've gone for some pace, and he's a tough little character. I've seen him play for the Chiefs. He knows how to score tries, and he's got a bit of fizz bang about him. He's not one to back down. So he'll be right in the face of the Springbok if he gets the opportunity. Damien McKenzie at the boot, he just gives us a bit of confidence there, obviously, and we've got the Hotham at number 9. So his run-in, in combination with Barrett's going to be very interesting in the testing conditions, which I think are going to be at Sky Stadium.
They usually are in Wellington, and it is predicted to be windy, and it's predicted to be cold. So, as they say, you can't beat Wellington on a good day.
Yeah, smart footy. It's just going to be smart footy. Well, you've got to play the conditions, and if you get a nudge, you get the ball, you just got to make sure you look after it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the big game beforehand will be the Wallabies versus the Pumas. Now, last week, I have to say, what a hell of a game it was, the Wallabies winning at the death. Obviously, you probably didn't have time to look at it because you were entertaining people, as you claim you were.
So, I was out with Rico having pre-drinks and... with Darren and Mike and crew, and we'd had a big screen so we could watch it. And my word,
that was a hell of a match. It was fast. Cool. You know, I've got to say this right now: daytime rugby. I'm looking forward to the Wallabies coming to Eden Park at a 5 o'clock kickoff, because I can tell you something right now. I look at this game tonight, big loss. They've dropped Pablo Mantera to the bench, which is huge because he is a big part of the Pumas. But, and of course, Tane Edmonds come in, Tom Liner's out. And I look at this, but I think if the Wallabies win this, I say it's all on for Eden Park in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, I think it already is. I think the Australians, true to form, have stepped up. Joey Schmidt's got to take a lot of credit, but he's been a lot more consistent. I mean, you look at that back row of Aussie Piggy, Valentini, Wilson, McFrake, that's been a good combination. Hooper and Williams, you're developing your combinations, your back three, tall, Jorgensen there and Callaway. So they're just starting to be consistent in their approach, even though they're down 21-7. Against a very, very good Argentinian side. They just couldn't hang on, and then they just woke up. But, no, good to see afternoon rugby. They've got confidence. And one thing you've got to respect, when the Aussies are confident, they're very dangerous. Nick White there, of course, the old master at the back of the scrum, and Slippers in the front row. So they've made a few changes. You mentioned Matera's been relegated to the bench with Molina. So they're obviously just trying a few combinations, I feel. We all know the World Cup's 18 months away. So I think the coaches are starting to just look and say, look, we've got to blood some players, give them some game time, put them in the deep end, and let's see how they respond in these tight test matches. So, bring it on. A great curtain raiser to the one at Wellington.
And, of course, then we move on to the Bunnings NPC. And I tell you what, there have been some really good matches starting off on Thursday night. Northland 43, Wellington 26, up in Whangarei. It's a bit of a fortress up there. And I have to say, Northland, they've got a damn good side and they've got a great chance of making playoffs.
Oh, no, look the way they're going. And they're prepared to throw the ball around, but in control. Very good at home. Picked them to beat Wellington. Just think that they are just on a roll at the moment. I thought that Apua and Corey Evans played very well. Just kept Wellington on the back foot. Very entertaining game, Peggy, but Northland, great to see the Tanafo going well.
And then last night, North Harbour will be absolutely kicking themselves. Waikato 29, North Harbour 28, a superb try at the end, a Lewaki throwing a miracle pass, which was for Waikato to beat North Harbour.
Yeah, look, it's just it's just what their season's been all about. I mean, Waikato, was it third or their fourth game They've won by 1 point. Boy, they go right to the death there, give the coaches heart attacks. But look, they're winning, and that's what matters. So that gives them a bit more comfort. They go up the ladder, North Harbour, without a win. So they're in the desperate, and I thought they had it. But again, just one mistake, not quite having the support. The ball was turned over, and they managed to get away with the points again. Waikato at home, very tough. Sopelunga again on form, and yeah, they're just biding their time. And they can only go from strength to strength.
Absolutely. Then we go to Saturday's game, and it's a battle of the bays. Bay of Plenty versus Hawke's Bay. Bay of Plenty really have gained some confidence, a morale-boosting win over Taranaki, and it wasn't just a win, it was a thrashing. Hawke's Bay, it's this one is a tough one to call, but I'm actually going to stick with the Bay of Plenty on this one.
Well, look at that. No love lost between these two sides. And as you mentioned, what a turn-up for the Bay. Thumping the Naki, what a great result, and give them confidence when they're playing at home here. So the Bay, Hawke's Bay, yep, wily old team there, pretty consistent, led by Parsons. The Flanders brothers are there again. You've got Fakatava and McClutchy, some pretty experienced here at 9 and 10. But then again, you've got Judd and Cashmore. They're no mugs, very settled. Forbes, number 15, always provide some impetus in the back line. Just got to get enough more. I know they'll be looking at Arcoy in the big engine room with Eklund to deliver. But you know what? I'm just going to give the edge to the Magpies. But it's going to be close.
Absolutely. And then we move on, Otago versus Taranaki. Now, this one is a game which I think is flown under the radar a bit. But Taranaki will be seething after that loss. But Otago, they're very hard to beat in Dunedin.
Oh, yeah, look, another one that's just flowing under the radar. What have they got? 4 wins from 6? Having a really good season and playing at home. Look, you'd expect the Naki and the Barnes, the coach, to come back and say, right, you know, pull up your socks, this is not us. Led by Boshier again, who I've got a lot of time for. I see that Crowley's back at number 9 there, and Jacob, he's really got to lead the cutter. Whatever ball he gets, he's got to use very well with his back line. Look, he's got some talent out there. But I think at home here, they've seemed to grow another arm and a leg, Otago. Nariki's going really well at number 11. Their Miller's very established there, Pledge at number 9. And Leo Willey's always a handful in the number 8 jersey for Otago. So you know what I'm going to do? I am going to stick with Otago at home. I think this will be an upset, and it'll be a big one.
I'd have to agree with you on that one, AJ, and I get told off for agreeing with you too much after all the, all the things you call me. Anyway, we move on to Sunday, and we'll start it off with the Big Shield Challenge: Canterbury versus Tasman, neighbour versus neighbour. I think Canterbury are just too good on this one, AJ.
At home, you'd have to think they've just won the Shield. I'd be very surprised if they didn't perform. As I say, you look at their very established back line, Enor, McLeod, White, Chapman, Bernavai, they've all been around. And you've always got that old Tawna Christie there in number 7 journey. So, look, big game from Derry to get to secure the ball. But don't underestimate Tasman. They rested a lot of players. Auckland had their first win, of course, last week, which was great. They've been there before. And, of course, when you've got Drummond at the 9 and Havili, and Havili at the back, and Springer, who's got some wheels, it's going to be a tough one. But I'm picking Canterbury at home. Very surprising if they lost it in the first challenge.
Absolutely. And, of course, at the same time, Auckland to play in Manawatu 40 years ago. Yep, as a 13-year-old, I should have now just revealed my age, but I was watching these flash blokes from up north when I was a kid in Christchurch rob us of the Ram Philly Shield. A certain A. Wetton was involved, and I believe he was offside the whole day, but that's... Isn't it good that this gets remembered, because this was one hell of a match?
Yeah, no, it is great. 40 years, well, it goes long ago. I can't, and you, 53, my word, obviously life's been a bit challenging for you.
Thanks a lot, AJ. Yeah, so we're just waiting for that. Yeah. Come on,
right,
Ken.
Obviously, life's thrown you a few curveballs.
Oh,
but anyway,
gosh,
walk tall, my friend, walk tall.
Yeah. Yeah.
So look, we're having a bit of a celebration tomorrow. We're catching up with Beam and the partners and having a bit of a lunch. Then we'll go into the lounge and watch the match. It's just gone so quick. Look, it brings back some great memories. But more importantly, the occasion, really special, in front of that crowd. I struggle to remember bits and pieces of it, Piggy. But what a great promotion for rugby. And it just tinged with a bit of sadness because in the reunion, of course, we're going to be missing a couple of my playing mates. Yep. Of course, the great, and I do say that, great Andy Hayden.
Absolutely.
And also Peter Futty along for
Johnny Drake as well,
Johnny
too.
Johnny Drake.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tinged with some sadness, but I look forward to catching up and hopefully also celebrating an Auckland win, two in a row. That will be something to add icing on the cake.
Absolutely, and no doubt you'll be saying a few words, even though you weren't even the captain of the side that day, you weren't in the leadership group, you'll just stick your nose in like you always do.
Well, I tell you what, there was a letter going around that I should be involved in the cap, and I don't know who started it. The funny thing was that the letter, there was only one signature, which was mine.
Hey, we'll just wrap this up. The MPC, the MPC off Southland versus Counties Manukau. Counties, you know, they haven't gone too badly, but I think Southland obviously will be hurting after the Shield loss, so I think Southland all the way in this one.
Well, Counties, a bit unlucky. Never write them off. They do surprise you, Counties. It depends where they are mentally today, but Southland will be hurting. They should bounce back at home. Hopefully they get a good crowd out to support them. They'll be disappointed. Hopefully there's not a hangover with that. And obviously, Withy's got to get his boys, the captain of Southland, together and say, right, we're back on the train here. Let's get a win at home. So, I'll pick Southland at home.
Absolutely. Well, AJ, obviously a weekend of rugby ahead, and I know that you've been picking up listeners for the station. I've actually, one of our sponsors, he's got a wee mate, he lives in China, he runs a bar, expats bar, and he's going to put it on there. They reckon that it could be, you know, I said, what's the reach? He said, maybe 2 million. So I'll be getting a certain guy, a little guy, Mike, who's a good dresser, who works out of a Graham Street studio, will be worried.
Well, I thought funny, the first thing is you said reach, and I thought, what are you, 3'9"? Well, that's going to pull in a lot of listeners. So listen, big heads up to our listeners, of course, because I've got a lot of time for Fenton Little, Puddington and Tigger, and of course, Birdie May. And I tell you what, there's going to be another one coming through. It's coming through right now, Teddy. Teddy, I don't know who you are, but where you are, but thanks for texting in and saying...
I know who that Teddy is. He said the best thing he ever done was get rid of AJ out of the Auckland team.
Well, that's a good one, thank you. Look, the lines are all just lining up, mate. Look,
okay, bye-bye. Catch you later, AJ. Cheers, mate, bye. AJ Wheaton, just always the irreverent... The irreverency of AJ, he's just brilliant. Anyway, next up, we're going to talk a bit of women's rugby with former Black Fern Cassina Sue.
I'll smile, don't know what it takes to fool this town. I'll do it till the sun goes down and all through the night time. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. I'll tell you what you wanna hear. Get my sunglasses on while I shed a tear. It's never the right time. Yeah, yeah.
Feeling sure is the only way to make friendships grow, but I'm too afraid now. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender, and this is this segment's brought to you by Force Electrical. Force Electrical are a dedicated bunch of professionals with over 10 years of experience. They're prompt, they are professional, and they will provide you quality services. So for all your electrical needs, give Force Electrical a call. The number is 021-629-340, or you can email Nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. Wow. Well, apart from the All Blacks playing in the Springboks, there's another New Zealand versus South African rugby match that's just as important in the Women's Rugby World Cup. Also, we've had a fantastic Farah Palmer Cup competition. And here to join us, she's a former Kiwi Ferns, former Black Ferns, part of the 2017 World Cup winning side. And she's also an excellent commentator, works for Sky TV. Christina Sue, good morning to you.
Morning, thanks for having me.
Hey, no, it's my pleasure, and thank you for making yourself available. I know you're very, very busy. Yeah, obviously the big talking point, Black Ferns versus South Africa tonight. Now, Alan Bunting's made four changes, but the side looks so good against Ireland in that final pool match. You know, what the changes made, what's your impression of this Black Ferns side so far?
Yeah, I think, this morning there was a media release that Amy Duplessis ruled out.
Yeah, I've just seen that, yeah.
Unfortunate for her with a shoulder injury, and there's a few other injuries which have forced some changes. Good to see Clive Olsen Baker's back in the mix, but you've got Vasenea Maitereki Whakalilu. She's come back into the mix with Tanya Colonavale at front row. So I think it's a settled side, as in that all 32 players are ready to go. And so it's positive that those skills that have come in for those injured players. I don't see South Africa being too challenging. They'll be physical, but it just gives us some extra rest time for those players that are carrying a few niggles.
Yeah, I would say that you'd have to favour the Black Ferns and heavily in this one, even though South Africa are a much improved women's rugby side from where they were back at the last World Cup. Their competition's professional, and I believe they can only improve.
Oh, they've made huge gains and strides for their game, and it's done their game in their country. So much good for them making this quarterfinal. And there's been a bit of media release around Sia Khaleesi, the former captain, supporting the Springbok women. So what they've achieved is phenomenal. Can only get some ascendancy there, but I think they'll be physical. They lead the competition in carries and dominant carries, and I think it's the second most pick and goes of any side. And they've done a 7-1 split on the bench of forward heavy, so you can tell that they'll be looking to beat our girls up front.
Absolutely, and there's nothing like it. It doesn't matter if it's men's or women's rugby. It is New Zealand, South Africa. There's still that rivalry. I look at the other quarterfinals, Canada versus Ireland. Now, Canada, to me, along with the Black Ferns and along with England, I believe they're the three teams I believe that are capable of winning the World Cup. No disrespect to France, but I think they should be too good for the Wallaroos.
Yeah, I think you're right there, and the three big juggernauts would be us, Canada and England. And remember that I think we drew to Canada as well not long ago. Black Ferns are they're professional. They've put some really classy players in their side. So I think between us three, we'll make it. They'll be the top three. You're right there.
Yeah, and of course, I think they'll be too good. This one's an interesting one. France versus Ireland. Ireland didn't qualify for the last World Cup, but they've made the quarterfinals. In the past, they've beaten the Black Ferns, but France probably just have that little bit of an edge over Ireland.
I think so, yeah. It's something about France. They just know how to show up for finals footy, and I think that they're ahead in terms of, I think they've got 29 wins to Ireland's three in terms of the head-to-head, so they'll be much the favourites in terms of what they'll bring. I think last time they met might have been in March this year, where Oh, shit, we're France 1, 27-15. Sorry, my baby's just put his blooming hand in my hot drink. Not good.
That's all good, Cassandra.
It's going all over the show.
Keep talking, Cassandra.
Sorry. That's sorry
okay.
about that.
That's okay. It's all good. Believe me, I've dropped the odd S-bomb on the radio. Yeah,
okay, so, sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay, so
yeah, I think France will be too strong for England, Ireland,
and of course England, Scotland. I think Scotland have really, in as far as a women's game, you know, they're making the quarterfinals is a bit of a victory for them. They're taking on England. England's is a juggernaut, Cassandra.
Yeah, no, I think they're head to head, 32-2. You know, they've scored close to 1,500 points, England, and then Scotland probably close to like 166 or something. So, yeah, they're long shot for beating them. I think they last met in April, where England won like 59-7. So yeah. Scotland, yeah, will be up against a big, yeah, a pretty hard team to try and beat. But like you said, they'll be proud to have made it to the quarters.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think that's pretty good. Then we go to the Farah Palmer Cup, and I, you know, even though it's been minus Black Ferns players, I think this competition this year has been, it's brought out so many surprises, and it's brought out results where you look twice. I think it's been a fantastic competition. So we're going to start it off, the championship semi-finals, Wellington Kauri versus Wellington Pride.
So what I know about the Cody is, you mean the Northland?
Yep.
Did you say? Yeah, Northland has been coached by a former Cyclone, Black Fern, Kiwi Fern, Jana Vaughan, who's spent much of her coaching career in Japan, having played and then been professional. This is her second year leading that side, so they're doing really well. And now Wellington Pride, for the amount of players that they have within their region, just kind of had an underwhelming season so far, but in saying that, they still have a chance to, you know, perform today.
I'm going to back the Kauri in this one. I think they're getting a bit of a pride up to the Northland region. Anyway, Otago Spirits versus North Harbour Hibiscus. Now, the Hibiscus has been in, you know, it's great to see them making the semi-finals, but, you know, I look at the Spirit side and I think it's probably time that there needs to be another South Island side in this premiership. So, I'm back in the Spirit in this one.
Oh, they are good. I mean, I commentated them earlier this year, and yeah, but I think in their point system, they're like sitting at 140-odd points for, and like no team has come close to it. Well, Wellington Pride's got a bit, but they're just, they look fit, structured, some good players across the board, and I agree. I think they'll probably be too strong for North Harbour today. And that other one, like you said, with Pride playing Cody, you know, that's going to be a really good match, but Cody potentially could upset them, but who knows, that one, it's going to be a close one.
I think it will be too. Then we go to the Premiership today, Bay of Plenty Volcanics versus Hawke's Bay Tui. You know, you've got to feel sorry for the Volcanics. It's been a tough old season for them, and the same with the Tui, and whoever wins stays up, whoever loses is likely to go down. I'm very, you know, I'd love to see, you know, I'd love to see Bay of Plenty get it because they've just had such a rough run this year. But also look at the Hawke's Bay Tui, you know, they've got a lot of players from Samoa coming back into the squad. Mm. This is a tough one. I favour Hawke's Bay, but you know, you're from the Bay of Plenty area. You know, it must be hard for the girls here at the Volcanics.
I'm actually from Manawatu, then they're at the top of the table.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that in a moment.
Yeah, but no, I think Tui, they are a new team. So I think if there's any team that almost doesn't deserve to go down, but it will be better for their development and growth of their game, they probably need to be in that championship. I mean, they are going to be bolstered with the likes of Denise Olapotea returning and Tori Isifo returning for Hawke's Bay, but I think, if anything, probably both those teams would be down in the championship just with where they're at in terms of development, and Spirit should definitely go forward and premiership, but only one is demoted and one promoted. So, yeah, bottom of the table clash there. Whoever wins, you know, deserves to stay up there. But like I said, I think Tui probably should go down just in terms of their to get more games, more evenly matched games going forward.
Well, then we come up to the next one. I know you've been waiting for this one. Waikato versus the Manawatu Cyclones. You know, the Cyclones have been brilliant this year. You know, when they upset Auckland, that started to raise a few eyebrows. They beat Counties Manukau Heat last week. You know what? I think it would be so good for this Wharepama Cup competition if Manawatu was to win this Wharepama Cup premiership. I think it would be such great for rugby, especially for women's rugby in the regions.
I think they ooze them with confidence. They had a really comprehensive win against Counties last week, and then they obviously took a lot of confidence from beating Auckland by that 1 point. Now, this will be a real good challenge to play Waikato, a good measuring stick as to where they're at and whether they can face it with, well, they can, they're top of the table, but you know, they're second on the table with clean breaks, first on the table with their carries and defenders beating. Their style of play is just so exciting, and you know, they definitely deserve to be in that final, and today will be a good measuring stick as to confirm, I guess, how the rest of us are thinking with them being deserving of the top two teams in the premiership.
And then the final game on Sunday at Eden Park. It's a traditional battle, Auckland Storm versus Canterbury, and you know, this one I'm a Cantabrian. For my sins, I live up in Auckland, and I'm going to favour the home team of this. I think Auckland will just edge out a very good Canterbury side.
Oh, I think it'll go either way. I'm actually not sure who's going to take that one. I know that Canterbury lost last week, did they, to Waikato?
Yeah, they did,
And then that will have a bit of a, see them to bounce back from that loss and take it as learnings to, so they'll have, you know, something a bit more deeper to play for and wanting to cause an upset away. Well, not an upset, but to perform really well away with Auckland Storm. I think Canterbury could potentially come away with it, actually.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm going to stick to the Auckland side, but please, anyone in Christchurch listening, I'm still a Cantabrian at heart. I won't be welcome. You know, that's the worst thing could ever wear as an Auckland rugby jersey in Canterbury, but I'll tell you about it another time. Cassina, what game are you commentating today?
I'm not doing commentary. I'm actually waiting to fly up to Auckland very shortly for the Black Ferns South Africa quarterfinal on the panel tonight.
Awesome. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I've looked at this Women's World Cup and, you know, like from, you know, we've seen, you know, from 2017 when you were part of that winning Black Ferns side, to see what you see now, you see huge crowds. It's huge. It's, you know,
it is, and
it's naturally evolved, and I think, you know, I think it's so good for the women's game that we are seeing big crowds, and you know, I think a lot of people will be definitely up at midnight watching that match, and of course then hopefully next week 6 o'clock in the morning, I know I'm going to be up for the semi-finals.
Yeah, no, get up for it, it's
going to
be an exciting one,
so. Yeah, well, if it's Canada, that's a tough one. Yeah, Cassina, thank you so much for making yourself available for me today. I hope you have a fantastic flight up and a fantastic weekend in Auckland. Now, I'm looking forward to your opinion on the panel tonight on Sky TV.
No worries. Thanks for reaching out, and take care.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Fantastic, wasn't it? Okay, next up we talk a bit of NRL and local rugby league with Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League.
And another thing I'm discovering lately, I'm a bit crazy for my rugby league team. Now the stage is set for the best season yet, you'll see. And you will hear me every week when I scream, that's my team.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM, and a big shout out to Douglas Drainage. You know, every problem has a solution. All solutions have a cost. Minimise the cost with information and technology provided, information with technology and research. That's what they do at Douglas Drainage. And I have to say, you know, proud sponsors of the show. So give them a call, 0274 838 737, or email them Diggins, diggins.co.nz. Anyway, we get into it. It's a big day in the city of Auckland, especially with the Warriors taking on the Panthers. Here to join us, as he joins us every Saturday, and Joey Green, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, mate. It's definitely the city of sales today because it's very, very windy outside as we're setting up some local footy today. However, there's lots more footy to talk through this weekend as we get into the action.
Absolutely, and of course, the first thing I'm going to give out, whoever organised this draw to play the Warriors versus the All Blacks at the same time really needs to, you know, get the needs to actually, you know, have a good hard look at themselves. Surely the NRL could have played that on Sunday, but hey, the Warriors faithful will be there. So the Warriors, you know, they've had a few changes. Kirk Capewell has gone into that centre position. Wade Egan is back, you know, but then we look at across the other board. Cleary, Yeo, Martin, Edwards, the list goes on and on and on. You know, Warriors come in as big, heavy underdogs against the Panthers, and I, you know, many would say that I'm favouring the Panthers, but I'm hoping for, you know, for the miracle at Go Media. I'm hoping that the Warriors can do it.
Yeah, I think the miracle at Go Media is a good, pretty good way to put it.
Well, we can't call it Mount Smart. I was going to call it the miracle at Mount Smart, but it's no longer Mount Smart. So yeah.
Yeah, look, either way, I don't mind the selection of Kirk Capewell at centre. Yes, he's a bit old and battered, and he's not as good as that 2020 Origin series for Queensland, but when you look at someone like Kirk Capewell, you know he's going to give you an 8 out of 10 every week, and I think they're just going to need an effort like that when you look at you know, how many superstars they've got on that Penrith side. I'm going to jump the fence in and probably going to back Penrith in as well, but I think like most fans that will be there tonight, including myself, you know, we'll be hoping for a miracle to happen, because Penrith, we know what they're capable of. Obviously, we've seen them win the last four premierships, and we know that, you know, they're not going in with as much pressure as they have in the last couple of years. However, the Warriors have probably got a world of pressure at the moment, not going in the most convincing form, but we've seen at the start of the year they're capable of being a top four side. They're just going to need someone like Tanner Boyd just to stand up and steer the ship around. We know he's a quality halfback, but now that the pressure's on come finals time, is he going to be capable of doing a job here?
Absolutely, and I think this is a time where Tanner does need to stand up. This match is going to be, I think it's going to be close, but it really would be, wouldn't it be great to see the Warriors in one more week of finals football, and, you know, to beat the Panthers. You know, they are, once they're in the top eight, you never bet against them. But yeah, I'm hoping for a Warriors victory. And obviously, Mr. Volandes and the NRL have decided we're going to put the NRL up against the All Blacks in New Zealand and see how the TV ratings go. That's probably the biggest interesting story, is apart from the rugby league. Anyway, last night, the Storm 26, the Bulldogs 18. Peasant and Munster's kicking game was brilliant, but Ali Katoa, this guy, you know, I remember him playing for the Warriors 5 years ago, and what a talent, and he's proven a talent in the Storm side.
Yeah, exactly right, and he's probably going to be a shoo-in for that, the Tongan side come Pacific Champs as well, but you'd hope that Stacey Jones throws the kitchen sink at him to get him into a Kiwis jersey come the World Cup time. And you could sense through the week as well with the Melbourne side, a lot of the talk was around Jonah Pezzett should be starting at halfback. They didn't name him there on Tuesday, but Craig Bellamy doing, you know, his smart tactic as always, and bringing him into that starting side an hour out, and what a masterstroke can prove to be. He's probably just got the game management that Tyron Wishart probably doesn't have at the moment as a halfback. But you could see once Wishart came onto the field, just injecting his bit of has got an X factor, which we know he's got coming off the bench. It just proves to be, I guess, the extra push that Melbourne need. Got to be big eyes on the Bulldogs next week when you look at Stephen Crichton going down, as well as Inari Tuala, but you can kind of work without Tuala. You can't really work without your captain and Stephen Crichton as well. So big eyes on him. It seemed to be a lucky move having Toby Sexton on the bench. You can just shift Matt Burden out to a centre and he still gives you a 10 out of 10 performance. But Stephen Crichton, he's one of those guys you just need in your team regardless of what position he plays. And if he's not going to be there next week, then that's going to be a much tougher task for the Bulldogs to survive another week of September.
Absolutely, he's so important to the Bulldogs. Anyway, we look at the weekend's game, the Sharks versus the Roosters. Now, this one is going to be interesting. The Sharks, they've played well at the back end, but the Roosters, they've really been the form team of the back end of the NRL so far.
Yeah, 100%. They've been one of the sides who, similar to Penrith, they didn't have a whole lot of pressure on them, considering themselves to be in somewhat of a rebuild. But if you're making the top eight and you're in a rebuilding year, that's a pretty good spot to be in. Keep your eyes on that extended bench for Cronulla, though, and Jersey 21. Britton Nikota, he's been missing for the last few weeks. And they've had a pretty handy replacement in Billy Burns as well. But from the sounds of going around the league, it sounds like Nikota is going to come back into that side. And it's going to fill that gap of Tom Hazelton missing the side as well. So a massive in for Cronulla having Nikota back. We know what he's capable of. He's, you know, one of the out-and-out best second rowers in the league as well. But it's going to be a close game to call with both of these sides riding a bit of good form at the moment. But I'm going to back the Roosters. It's going to be tough to do it in Cronulla, but if there's any side who's going to be able to turn up come final football, it's got to be the Roosters.
And then we move on to, obviously, then the final game, the Raiders, the minor premiers versus the Brisbane Broncos. This one's a cracker. This is the hardest game I found to pick. And, you know, and this is the one where the Broncos, they have come into form, but the Raiders, you know, we didn't expect them at the beginning of the year to be minor premiers. We probably thought they may make the eight, they may not. Well, they're the top of the table. And, you know, as much as I like the way the Broncos play, with the way Michael Maguire's got this team humming, I really believe that the Raiders will win this one. And I think it's been a long time coming for the Raiders where they've had such a good side.
Yeah, it's definitely been a long time coming. You can only think back to, you know, the Mal Meninga days and the Ricky Stewart days of the Canberra Raiders, when it's probably been the last time that they were so convincing in that top four as well. And especially when you look at when these two sides played earlier on in the season as well. You know, Canberra beat them at home in Canberra, and everyone was, you know, largely considering it an upset. And then Canberra turned out to win the minor premiership come the back end of the season. So I don't think there are a lot of people expecting that, and I don't think a lot of people were expecting the Broncos to beat Melbourne last weekend as well. So, you know, the Broncos are coming into finals football off the back of four straight wins, and Canberra are coming in a super confident side, and you can't really read into the result they had last weekend because, you know, they got 60 put on them from the Dolphins. But when you compare the two sides from last week to this week, a lot of those boys playing for Canberra last week are filling in for their New South Wales Cup side tomorrow afternoon. So, you know, yes, they got 60 put on them last week, but, you know, you could probably say a handful of those guys are backing up this week. So I'm expecting it to be a cracker, and I think Canberra should be able to get the job done at home again.
Absolutely. So we move on. New South Wales Cup, a big shout out to the Warriors. They've got the Dragons, and, you know, a win there would put them in the New South Wales Cup final.
Yeah, it's been a massive year for the New South Wales Cup side, and it's been a pleasure to see one of my good mates, Jordan Papa, be involved in that side as well. So a quick shout out to him. But when you're looking at a side who, you know, when you include the likes of Tom Ali, Bunty Ahua, Sam Healy as well, you know, a side full of quality first graders. So it's a testament to the depth that the Warriors have at the club at the moment, and especially with the winning streak they went on as well at the start of the season. It's going to be tough to stop this side, but if there's any side that's going to do it, it's going to be a side that beat them a few months ago. and the Dragons as well. So a tough matchup. Lachie Ilias is in a world of good form for the Dragons reserve grade, so if it's going to be anyone to stop the Warriors train, it'll be him. But I think the Warriors boys should just be too strong, and they'll see themselves book a spot in the grand final in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. National Men's Premiership, Waikato versus Akarana at Davis Park and Huntley.
Yeah, look, it's going to be a tough matchup for the Waikato boys tomorrow afternoon. They had a heavy loss against, or a heavy win rather, against Bay of Plenty last weekend, taking on the Akarana side, who we saw last week that whilst they didn't get the, you know, the result they were after against the county side, you know, they're a very, very talented team still, and they've got a lot of youth in that side, in the Akarana side. And I think they'll see the results that they're after tomorrow, or this afternoon, rather, against a very inexperienced Waikato side, but no doubt they'll be building for a couple of years.
Absolutely, and then we go to the Auckland Vulcans versus Counties Manukau. Now, obviously, the Vulcans, the Auckland Rugby League's team, and of course, you know, I think the Vulcans, I think you'd have to put them as favourites in this one, mate.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking that way as well. Yes, the county side are very stacked on paper, but like we touched on last week, and having you know, the superstar side doesn't always correlate to premierships. You know, with our boys in the blue and white winning back-to-back national comps, definitely the game of the round. And speaking to a good colleague of ours, Simon Aramea, through the week,
yeah,
it's definitely a game that. It's definitely a game that the Vulcans boys have had circled on their calendar since the draw came out. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this game turns out in a couple of hours, but I'm looking forward to seeing the Vulcans boys get the job done to start the weekend.
Simon Aramea, absolute brilliant person, mate. I've got a lot of time for Simon. Anyway, we move on to the Women's Premiership. Waikato versus Akarana, Counties Manukau versus Wellington, and of course the Vulcans make the trip down to Christchurch to take on the Canterbury Bulls.
Yeah, with the first couple of games, I'm definitely expecting to see the Auckland sides in Akarana and Counties be too strong for the counterparts. I thought Wellington might have put up a better challenge against the Vulcans last weekend, but didn't quite get the job done. So no doubt Counties will put the sword to them, as well as Akarana putting a clinic against Waikato this weekend as well. But the Vulcans, ladies, they got the result they were after last week against Wellington. Claiming that matchup compared to last year's result down in Wellington, and a Canterbury side who aren't necessarily going to be the favourites on paper, but you know they've always been one of those provinces outside of Auckland who always just seem to challenge year in, year out. I think our Vulcans girls will go down there and get the job done, but I don't think the Bulls are going to make it an easy one for them.
Absolutely. Well, Joey, we'll wrap it up there. You have a wonderful weekend. We catch up next week. Hopefully we'll be talking about the Warriors still in the competition, and enjoy the rest of your week, mate.
Yeah, hopefully the Warriors get the job done this afternoon. It's going to be a massive atmosphere. I can't wait to be at the game as well, but hopefully the Vulcans boys get the job done first, and then we'll chat about that again next week.
Absolutely. Catch you later. Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. So next up, we have I had an interview with Lee Piper about what's been happening at New Zealand netball. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. We conducted an interview about the big week in netball, and I was able to have a quick chat to Lee Piper. So I'll just put that interview on.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM, and this is proudly brought to you by WaterSmart. You know, they're looking for water conservation when we come up to that dry summer, looking for a tank that's going to be there for to hold much, to keep you in water and during these dry times. See Water Smart, they have tanks to suit your property, sizes to suit your property. So give them a give them an email, watersmart.co.nz. Big thanks to Andrew Olson. Well, obviously the big news of the week has been this with Dame Nolan Tarua being stood down as the Silver Ferns coach. Now, joining us, he's a regular to the show. We know him as the mouth of the South, but just Lee Piper. Now, he was on the board of New Zealand Netball. He is a current player agent for 7 ANZ Premiership players, including Silver Ferns players. And he's here to chat to us today. Well, Lee, I'm going to be straight to the point. New Zealand netball consistently are getting egg on their face. I just can't believe how messy this has been handled, how it's been, how their dirty laundry's been aired to the public, and why now are we making this change 12 days out from the Tommy Jamieson Cup?
Good morning, Adam. It's actually extraordinary, really, and I think, as you say, even if this has been an ongoing simmering problem, to have it kind of reach its climatic conclusion and basically the suspension of the coaching team 12 days out from the opening of an international series is extraordinary, really. And, look, I mean, I guess it's probably a little bit of faults on both sides, and we haven't really completely dug into it, but people have now got hold of it. Dana Johansson has written a good story, which I understand is pretty close to the mark in radio in the RNZ article.
Yep.
Susan McFadden, who's got her ear very close to the ground, has written a similar type article with similar type threads and themes, I think, in a newsroom article. So I think you can draw from those conclusions that there is certainly there is some truth around, particularly that camp earlier on in the year. Now, what's interesting in this is normally, in my experience, and we can talk about this, player power goes the other way. So normally it's the players within the camp trying to keep hold of the coach, as we saw last year with, or a couple of years ago with Ian Foster, because they're the guys getting picked. So I like the coach because she's chosen me and she's selecting me. So why would I throw out a coach who's actually ticking the box? Now, I don't know. I don't know underneath this, you know, in terms of the old school that they're talking about, and maybe she's a bit tougher, maybe she's a disciplinarian. But when you have quality people like Laura Langman and Maria Folau, Maria Tutoye, now Maria Folau, coming out in absolute support of the coach, and other well-known stalwarts and ex-coaches coming out and saying, this is madness, you kind of go, which side of the ledger are you going to go on here? Now, there's a lot to unpack here. There's that part of it, and then to your point and your introduction there, there's the part around Netball New Zealand and their handling of it, the way they've run the review, the fact that it seems like there was little input from the coaching staff into the review, and then my understanding is they've now lawyered up. So it's a mess, and now it's becoming a public mess, and unfortunately for them, their CEO's away on an overseas holiday, and it's having to be fronted by the chair of Netball New Zealand, Matt Willeray. So all of that is, and look, this is gold for news media organisations at the moment, because that they, you know, we should be celebrating a Rugby Women's World Cup and the Netball series coming up with the Silver Ferns, and instead we're embroiled in what can only be described as an absolute mess and a PR disaster for the sport.
You know, Lee, we've spoken before about this. Like, Netball New Zealand is supposed to be a professional organisation, and I'm not being too hard on them, but how come at a community sports level, when there's a problem, it gets sorted there and then, and there are reviews done, and it takes, and it's done within 48 to 72 hours? They have let this fester for almost 6 months now. This really sounds, it sounds like, I feel sorry for Dame Nolan. I think, you know, if they were going to do it, they should have done it straight away and said, this is not working. Instead, they've let it fester. Now, the Players Association have got involved. I see Steph Bond, she's not making any comments at this stage. High Performance New Zealand now has been involved. This is, what is happening, you know, I can't believe it. Netball New Zealand, I just look and I just shake my head. Not only have we lost a whole ANZ premiership to team to Australia, but it's just the whole way things have been handled. It is, to me, it doesn't sound like it's been handled properly.
Well, I think that the reality of it is, and again, we're only speculating, and the reason that we're speculating, yep, which is always dangerous, is because we've got a lack of information, and we know that. And I think the fact, as I said previously, that they've had to lawyer up, and it's now become a bit of an employment issue. But this is that relationship's gone. Like, if it was me, I would have just terminated Nolene and Debbie Fuller straight away, because you are not going to, like, rightly or wrongly, you're not going to get an outcome, because it's like any employer and employee relationship. Once that trust is gone and they don't trust each other, the relationship's shot. There's no trust. It's gone. Maybe on both sides, but it's gone. And so you're better to part ways, because this is going to linger, and Netball New Zealand coming out and saying, we're working on it, to what conclusion? They're not coming back here. If you thought that seven of your senior players in a team of 12, or even in a squad of 16, half your team don't want you, you're gone. It's gone. Now, what I don't understand in this, and again, we're speculating, is why wasn't the framework set at the beginning? So they go to camp, there is players coming forward saying, we're not happy. So if there was a review done at that time, what's the framework to the review? In other words, what are the agreed, if it was me, and again, we're speculating as to what happened, and some of this might have happened, but you sit down with the coaching staff and you say, we've got a problem, we're wanting to run a review, we want you to have input into the review because we need to clear the air. You agree on what the framework is going to be, you agree on what the time frame is going to agree, and you agree on the potential outcomes, and when those outcomes and the report is presented, what are the next steps? It seems to me that there has been some shroud of secrecy as this has dribbled on. To your point, it's just been allowed to dribble on. There's been no framework. The coaching staff have not been informed along the way, and it looks like not really consulted. There's been interviews done, and we've ended up where we've ended up. So I don't think you could run anything as badly. Again, to my point previously, where is the outcome? We've now gone back to poor old Yvette McCall's, and jury's going to have to pull one out of the bag here. Luckily, they're not playing Australia. But just remember, mate, this is less than 12 months ago where we regained the Constellation Cup. We could have swept Australia 3-0. We won 2-1. We only, in my view, lost the third one because we didn't have Grace Nowicki. And as I've said on this show before, no Nowicki, no chance. She's that good. So we were on the right track. We're a year out from the Commonwealth Games, a year out from the World Champs. So we're on the right track. We, ironically, and what we've been talking about, Amon, in regards to players going into the SEC in Australia, that'll help New Zealand. From a high performance play, we could argue the merits, as we have on the show, around the effect that will have on the ANZ Premiership. But from a high performance perspective, you're going to have seven players, potentially more as this goes on, playing in the best competition in the world. You cannot deny the strength of Australian netball in terms of their depth, and you cannot deny that they will get better the more players we have. It's exactly the same as if suddenly we had half a dozen teams in the NPC from Australia. Those Australian teams would get better because we have more depth and we are better. The same is in reverse here. So from a high performance level, we're on the right track. I hear the high performance managers on stress leave. There is rumours around others. It is an absolute disaster. The problem with this, mate, is where do you go? So say, for example, we play South Africa. We're going to know by the end of the month. We beat them. We should comfortably beat them with the talent we've got, 3-0. What happens? Where do we go? We've got the Constellation Cup following it, and we're still in limbo land. We're not going anywhere. So there's no decisive decision. There's a parting of the ways. The independent review we agree with as a board. We've taken on board the findings, and we have dismissed our coaching staff, and we have now gone with an interim coaching staff. We are now interviewing for the new position, and we are hoping to have that position in by the Constellation Cup. Now, you could argue the merits of that. You could say that's wrong. You could say it. Nolene has been treated poorly, and largely I think she has been treated terribly. However, that is still decisive leadership. That is still decisive management on how to manage it. This is purgatory for the coaching staff. and not surprisingly, Netball New Zealand are getting Kane, and they deserve to, from the board to the CEO and senior management. It is a disaster.
Absolutely, Lee. So look, moving forward, obviously we have the series against South Africa for the Tidy Jamison Cup trophy, and then of course we move on to the Consolation Cup. Obviously looking to move forward, there will be no, Dave Nolan won't be there, and that's it is looking clearer and clearer by the day. What happens to Dave Nolan? Does she move overseas to coach in Australia or England?
Well, I don't know her personal circumstances around her family life and how that would be. However, she would be... you look at the success that she's had. She coached the Sunshine Lightning, who were a dog team, won it. She went back when she was unwanted by Netball New Zealand, I might add, and coached the Southern Steel and won a championship. But the woman has got gold. Now, sure, there might be a little bit of fraction with these new age... players coming in who want to have more inclusion and want to have more say. Again, we're speculating, mate, because we don't know, and
yep,
we don't know the
truth,
which again is dangerous, because the problem when you have a squad of 16 and you say seven players don't rate the coach, you then, the other, say, nine players that do rate the coach, where do they sit? Like, they're just hung out to dry with no one looking after them because they're speculating within the group. So there's suspicion, which again is horrendous. I've got four players in that group, and I haven't talked to them personally, and to be honest with you, I'll probably leave them alone. They've got enough to worry about. But again,
yep,
it's all
absolutely.
However, she has got serious coaching credentials, and I just want to go back to one point. And I know we're running out of time here, but Netball New Zealand was in an absolute head case state. They went to Nolan for the 2018 World Champs, and they were gone. They couldn't. I think they got beaten by Malawi. They were that bad. And they didn't want Nolan. They have rejected her on many occasions. And Netball was dogs, like just dog pooping. She picked them up in a really short period of time. And albeit I thought she had a great team, and we've talked about this before, and made them world champs. From a position where we couldn't beat Malawi, we didn't even get on the dais at the Commonwealth Games. And she made them world champs. And Netball New Zealand, they absolutely rode that train and put themselves in the glory position. We are world champs. We are the greatest. And they rode the Nolene train, having already rejected the girl. It was like the second coming of Jesus Christ. They were that impressed with her. And suddenly, and I think that's what's disappointing people, mate, is that she's almost like single-handedly dragged the sport out of the mire. And sure, she's had her ups and downs, but as I said before, she won the Constellation Cup, which is like the Bledisloe Cup, and we're now going, sorry, you're up. It's just astounding to me. And I think the biggest astonishment is that they had just gone through, and you'll remember this, they'd just gone through a review for the coaching. They had simply put these guys through the ringer. She had to rumour she just reapplied for her job along with Deb Fuller. They went through that review. They reappointed her, and now they're going, no, sorry. Like, the amount of sub-stories within the story is, again, I'm just shaking my head. And as someone that, you know, was a proud member of the Netball New Zealand board from, you know, particularly through that Trans-Tasman era from 2000 and the back end of 2006 for 9 years, I can't tell you how disappointed I am.
On that note, we'll call it there, Lee. Thank you so much for your time, mate.
No problem.
Cheers.
And that was Lee Piper. So next up, we will have Seamus Martin as we talk a bit of football.
Got my hands out, nowhere to go. 'Cause the country is all I know. 'Cause I can feel it like the old times. People treat me strong and warm.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. I'll just adjust that mic there. Anyway, we get on to our football part of the show, and just before we get on to it, a special shout out to, if you're looking to buy, if you're looking to sell, if you're looking to get on this Auckland property market, well, this is the person you need to see. His name is Robert Thompson. He works out of the Epsom branch of Barford and Thompson. He is one hell knowledgeable on this real estate market. We'll give you the give you great advice. We'll get a great price for you, and we'll help you go through getting on this Auckland market. His number is 021-737-949, or you can email him r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. And it's a big shout out to joining us, as he joins us every Saturday morning, the big fella from that small podcast called Between Two Beds, Seamus Martin. Good morning to you.
Morning, Eamon. How are you doing?
Listen, mate, I'm excellent. I'm absolutely excellent. It's a windy, sort of cold-winded day, but it looks like it's going to be a nice day. It's a big weekend of sports. And, of course, just one thing before, of course, we finished up during the week. The All Whites went down to the Socceroos 3-1, but I look at the series and, you know, we look at the result and Australia, the talent they've got is amazing. The young talent is scary. I think they're going to be a tough prospect in a few years' time. But when we look at the series, what do you think the gains Darren Bazley has made out of the series?
I think Darren will be frustrated if I speak my truth, yep. Eamon. I think New Zealand in both the games had the better of the first halves and really should have put the matches to bed in those two first halves in Canberra and back at Go Media Stadium on Tuesday night. I think it was missed opportunities. I think it was a really big opportunity missed to get two wins against, you know, a top-ranked opposition. Yes, Socceroos have got some good players, and look, Aaron Kunda, the young man up front, was outstanding, so was Toure, but it wasn't the Socceroos side we've seen in the past with the really high caliber names of the likes of Harry Kewell and Brett Emerton. You know, those were real global superstars. So I think it's a case of a missed opportunity. I think for sure some players emerged from Darren Bazley's perspective with enhanced reputations. I look at Sarpreet Singh and Ben Old in particular in that second game. I thought Ben Old was excellent. You know, Francis De Vries, deputising for the injured Liberato Kikachi, took his opportunity, set up a great goal for Chris Wood. You know, Tim Payne had a good chance to make himself a hero in the first half, but, you know, a phenomenal save, wasn't it, to tip it up over the crossbar. If we look specifically at the second game, I think the young central defensive pairing of Bindon and Sermon were exposed a little bit. I think that's a fair thing to say. And I think we missed the experience of Michael Boxall, who was excellent in the first game in Canberra. So lots of things, I think, for Darren Bazley to think about. I think one of the glaring things that stands out to me, I don't know if you agree with this, is we have a real over-reliance, I think, on Chris Wood to provide us with goals.
Yeah.
I think if Chris Wood doesn't score, I can't see us creating lots of opportunities from open play to find someone else in the box to score. You know, we didn't even see Costa Barbarousis in the second game. We saw him a little bit in the first match. There was no Ben Wayne in the squad this time around. I just wonder whether that lack of goal scoring might just cause us a little bit of problems on the very, very biggest stages of all.
I'm going to have to agree with you there, because I don't see any creative player, and I'm going to be straight on about the tactics. Now, I know this is an old saying, oh, tippy-tappy football. Well, you know, you've got a big guy up there who can score off his head, can score off his feet. Instead of tippy-tapping around, get the ball into the man. Get him working. But the Australians did outmark him. And I think, you know, I think we cannot find that second striker. And I don't believe Ben Wayne is the answer. And obviously we are struggling. Maybe Jesse Randall may come to the fore, but we need an out-and-out striker to support Woody.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. When you've got a player like Chris Wood, you're right. You want early delivery. You want balls into the box. You want him to make a nuisance. But when he is your only real attacking threat. It becomes, you know, quite obvious for the opposition to try and mark him out of the game. And more often than not, we saw, you know, Woodsy was sort of 2-3 Australians really in and around him, making it very difficult to find space. The one time Francis De Vries did whip in an early cross, Wood gets in front of his defender, pokes it past the goalkeeper, and we score. But, you know, it's great to have that option, but to have a little bit of variation in attack, I think that's something that Darren will look to try and implement in these matches coming up in October when we go to Europe, and then again in November when we go to America, as it's finally been announced, two games there in America against South American opposition. One bright spark to come off the bench was Luke Brooks-Smith. It was only a 10-minute cameo. You know, the exuberance and the enthusiasm of a 17-year-old running around, you know, it was a bright spark there. He's got big things on the horizon later on this month, named in the under-20 side, which will go to the World Cup in Chile with the likes of Lucas Kelly-Held and Stipe Ukic. So some good players, some good talent coming through at under-20 level. But on the flip side, you've got the opportunity for a Marco Stamenic to come back into the squad, for a Matt Garbutt to come back into the squad, and even for a Libby Kakachi to come back into the squad as well. So, look, I might be a little bit harsh on the Socceroos, All-Whites, Soccer Ashes two-match series, but I do think a really big missed opportunity for New Zealand there after really dominating the first two halves of the two games.
And, of course, then over the weekend, we had our Chatham Cup and Kate Shepherd Cup, Victors, Wellington Olympic and Auckland United.
Yeah, I was 1-0 here. I successfully predicted Wellington Olympic to defeat Auckland United. That was a 4-2 win. I wouldn't say dominant win for Wellington Olympic, but they, I think their big match experience showed in that final. First time for Auckland United under their current guys to make it into the Chatham Cup final, and they made a game of it for sure. But, a guy like Hamish Watson, who in my opinion should be playing at a much higher level regularly, had an opportunity with the Wellington Phoenix. It just sort of hasn't really happened for him at that professional level, but he's a top player at that New Zealand domestic level, helping Wellington Olympic to the Chatham Cup, back-to-back Chatham Cups, I think, and also for Paul Eiffel, I think that's a hat-trick of Chatham Cups, one with United and two with Wellington Olympic. So Eiffel doing great things in the dugout there for the Greeks down in Wellington. And Auckland United, I predicted Wellington Phoenix reserves to roll them in the Kate Shepherd Cup, but they flexed their muscles, didn't they, and showed just how good they are at that women's domestic level, a 4-1 win over Wellington Phoenix, who didn't really fire a shot. They were blown away in the first half, got themselves on even pegging at 1-1, and then two quick goals take it to 3-1 at halftime, and then a final one nail in the coffin for Auckland United, whose attentions will not only move to the New Zealand Women's National League, but also to the inaugural FIFA Women's Club World Cup, where they take on Wuhan United in China on the 8th of October. So big things on the horizon for Auckland United on the women's space.
Absolutely. And, of course, talking about the Wellington Phoenix women, huge signing. Macy Fraser's coming back to the Phoenix.
Yeah, great to see her coming back and lining up. She was one of the biggest signing, I think, the biggest transfer from the A-League women into the US system a couple of years back when she left the Wellington Phoenix. I think she's only made 9 appearances for her club in America, and it just hasn't really worked out for her. Bev Priestman, seeing an opportunity, has pounced, and it's great to see Macy Fraser back in the yellow and black of the Wellington Phoenix. Hopefully she can deliver and get back to the levels that she threatened to get to before. She sort of just has almost stunted. I see they're back on the training pitch as well down in Wellington, which is good signs. They've still got one visa place available. Talk about that perhaps going to a midfield player, but that bodes well. And I see their first game of the season will be part of a double header when Wellington Phoenix men host Auckland FC at Sky Stadium.
Oh, great.
See, that's going to be a real afternoon of football on the 8th of November, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, I'm actually contemplating going down for that game. And, I might even catch up with you down in that game. But just another Auckland football team, Auckland City FC, they've got a Intercontinental Cup game.
Yeah, that's right. They're over in Cairo, Egypt at the moment. They'll take on Pyramids FC on the early hours of Monday morning. That is a new competition that FIFA introduced to supplement or to support the new FIFA Club World Cup that Auckland City participated in earlier this year. So they qualified for the National League. They jumped on a plane, headed to Dubai for a 3-4 day training camp, took in a match against Alessandro Andrea Pirlo's team over there in Dubai, and now they're taking on Pyramids FC on Monday morning before flying back and taking in the National League men. So, you know, a pretty busy period for some of these young domestic footballers flying all over the world. You know, a guy like Christian Gray, who, you know, is a part-time teacher. I saw him down at the National Secondary Schools Tournament in Palmerston North, coaching there for Auckland Grammar. You know, what an amazing opportunity for someone like that to be flying here, there and everywhere to get to play the sport that he loves.
And, of course, the under-20 squad for New Zealand has been named for the World Cup. And, you know, we speak about Luke Brooks-Smith, but and any surprises or any names we should look out for?
Oh, look, I think Stipe Ukic is one. You know, I mentioned it before. He was doing great things for Auckland City when he was here under the guidance of Ivan Visalic. Really took a shine to young Stipe. He's over in Croatia playing now. I think his progress, you know, there's no doubt in my mind he will be an all-white. I think a competition like the Under-20 World Cup is a chance for him to just test his mettle at that next level. And great to see these players coming through. Good to see as well a smattering and a mixture of players from within the Wellington Phoenix system, from the Auckland FC reserve system as well as a few players based overseas, you know, there as well. So, Chris Greenacre in charge of that under-20 side, and he'll be wanting to make sure that they apply themselves and continue a good record that we've had at under-20 level of qualifying for the round of 16, getting out of the group stage and getting into those knockout games as well.
Anyway, we move on to the EPL, and of course a big weekend of EPL, and we started off Arsenal versus Chris Wood's Nottingham Forest, a new gaffer at Forest and Big Ange, and this is going to be interesting times for old Chris Wood there.
Well, if Nottingham Forest were my second favourite team because of the the Kiwi influence of Chris Wood there, now that they've got Big Ange in charge, it really cements them as my number two team. I think too short a time frame, too short a runway for Ange to make any real changes in the way they play coming up against a good Arsenal side. But I'm going to pick that game to end in honours even. I'm going to pick a draw on that one. I just think Nottingham Forest might have a point to prove. Some of their players might have a point to prove. And you know, the arrival of a new manager generally brings a breath of fresh air. Coming off the international window, maybe a couple of the players are a little bit fatigued. But I think they might surprise a few people and come away with a point at Arsenal.
Anyway, then we move on. Everton versus Aston Villa. Palace versus Sunderland. Everton. I think Everton will beat Villa.
I've sat on the fence on this one again. I'm sitting on the fence a few times this week, Eamon. I'm going to go a draw between Everton and Aston Villa, but I am going to tip Crystal Palace to defeat Sunderland. Although I did have a little thought about Sunderland maybe causing an upset down in London, but I think the experience of Crystal Palace will hold them in good stead there.
And then we move on to Newcastle versus Wolves, our big sugar daddy Bills, AFC Bournemouth versus Brighton, and Fulham versus Leeds. Now, I'm going to go for a Newcastle win, and I'm going to do, proudly brought to you by Bunnings, I'm sitting on the fence taking a draw in Bournemouth versus Brighton, and Fulham versus Leeds, I'm going Fulham all the way.
Well, I've agreed with you on all three of those results. I'm exactly the same. Newcastle too strong at St James's Park over Wolves. I can't separate Bournemouth and Brighton. I think that'll finish a draw. And Fulham at Craven Cottage should be too strong for Leeds, who are also, like these other teams that have been promoted from the Championship, just struggling a little bit, it seems, to get to the pace of the Premier League.
Then we move on to a bit of a London derby, West Ham versus Spurs. Now, be careful here. Be very careful, Seamus. There's a lot of Hammers fans. I'm speaking to one later on, Miles. And so I'm going for a draw here.
Oh, you're appeasing the fans. Tottenham are going to win that one. They're the form side. And I said it at the start of the season, or before a ball was kicked, I can see this being a very difficult season for West Ham fans, and I think it's proving to be the case. Three matches in, kind of, you know, they had a good performance against Nottingham Forest, but really haven't fired a shot yet. Still super early days, isn't it? But I think Tottenham are the form side to win that London derby.
Absolutely. And then we go to some of the Monday games. Brentford versus Chelsea, Burnley versus Liverpool, and the Manchester derby. Well, I think Chelsea, they are going to challenge Liverpool for this title. I think they'll win.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've said they're my smoky for pushing Liverpool all the way here. I think Chelsea are a very, very dangerous side in this English Premier League this season. So I'm tipping them to beat Brentford away from home. Liverpool will be too strong for Burnley. It'll be the first sighting of Alexander Isak in a Liverpool shirt, hopefully, for Liverpool fans. And he might mark his debut with a win, you never know. Copped a little bit of criticism for his performance for Sweden in the European qualifiers in the international window, so he'll be wanting to prove a point. And the Manchester derby, look, unfortunately for your mob, I can see Man City, although they haven't been in great form this season, just being too strong for Man United. Although I can see it going the other way, and I can see the Red Devils getting up and heaping a little bit more pressure on Pep Guardiola, who hasn't had a great start to the season.
Well, the first two I agree with you. The second one, now, I've just decided that I'm going to sit on the fence, more for the fact that the draw is paying $4, and I'm going to back it as a draw, one all draw all day.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, the money doesn't lie. Oh, look, here's a controversial statement. I'd be happy if Manchester United won that game against Man City. I think it would be a good thing for the Premier League to have a Manchester United that are back in form, that are back challenging, that are back amongst the contenders. But, recent history suggests that it'll be a Manchester City win.
I've just had a text from the Liverpool Supporters Club. They said, remind Seamus after that statement, his membership is revoked.
Hey, look, it's all for the love of the game. All for the love
Absolutely.
Of the game.
Absolutely. And Seamus, much planned for the weekend?
Quiet one. I think, like a lot of New Zealand, look, we were, in this household, we were glued to the All Blacks South Africa game last week. That was enthralling watching. We'll be doing it again. We'll be channel surfing with the Warriors. I think there's some World Athletics champs that I've got a family member competing at.
Oh, congratulations.
So that'll be on there, and then if we can really keep ourselves awake, we'll tune in for the Black Ferns versus South Africa Women's Rugby World Cup quarter final kicking off at midnight, and really backing all the teams in black this weekend.
Thank you so much, Seamus. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Cheers. Brilliant bloke, my old mate Seamus. Anyway, I've done an interview with Brenda now from South Africa to get a South African's perspective on this match tonight. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Yesterday I was able to conduct an interview with Brenda Nell, who's involved with Supersport, multimedia journalist, just on tonight's test match.
Good morning everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. Wow, what a game it was last week. The All Blacks really caught the Springboks on the hop. Fantastic comeback by the Springboks. Still a very, very entertaining test. As always, and, you know, last week he was on our show and he was very popular for a lot of our listeners. And I think the last South African we had so popular was Irene van Dyk, who ended up playing for the Silver Ferns. But I will say this, I love his analysis of the game. So we get the South African perspectives. Brendan Nell, multimedia award-winning journalist, good morning to you, or good evening to you in South Africa.
Good morning to you guys. I'm not quite sure I can shoot goals like Irene van Dijk, but I don't think I'll end up playing for the Kiwis or for the Black Ferns or one of those. Yeah,
okay, we'll just leave it at that. I think we just leave it at that.
Hey, just, I can only get myself into trouble if I go further.
Yeah, I think so. We'll just leave it at that, Mr. Nell. Anyway, last week, well, it was a hell of a test, 24-17.
An amazing start by the All Blacks, and then of course South Africa came back. The All Blacks just done enough, and Ardie Sevier's 100th test to win this, to take this test. But this is what, and then straight after on the Monday, and I was absolutely, and I'm going to ask these questions to you, Brendan. So I start off, 7 changes, halfback first 5-8 combination, that's changes. The All Blacks have made 4 through some enforced through injury. My question is, why so many, why so early, or could Rassi be foxing us New Zealanders?
Yeah, I think let's first start with the selection. To me, I was chatting earlier today with Nick Mallett about it, and the former Bob Coe, and he was also a bit perplexed, but he also made the point that, you know, Rossi's been doing this for quite a while now. He's been changing his teams for the last year and a half. And this year, I mean, he's used 30 players already in the rugby championship, out of the 36 that he selected. And he said at the beginning of the year to us, he said, listen, no player's going to play more than 8 or 9 games. Obviously, part of that is trying to get some of those older Springboks, the double World Cup winners, to get them through to the next World Cup. So they're trying to manage their time. And you've got a host of youngsters coming through that they want to get up to about 30 tests before the next World Cup as well. Mm. So it's a fine balance. I think also, but there's a bit more to it this week. I think this week it's, last week he picked pretty much his first choice team, all the World Cup winners, and they didn't do the job. So in a way, I sort of think that it's the sort of thing that Rossi would say, well, these youngsters have got a shot now. If they step up and they take this test and they win, then the older guys are going to be put on notice. There'll be a lot of very nervous older, more experienced Springboks in that group. And second of all, he's going to get, he made the point this week at the press conference that playing the All Blacks in New Zealand is probably one of the greatest, toughest things that a Springbok player can ever do. And he said it's all very well these youngsters playing against Italy and England, and well, he didn't mention England, but playing against other sides, and not ever getting the pressure of playing all the All Blacks in New Zealand. And he wants these youngsters to see what they can do. That's part of it. I think so all that put together made these changes. I think we were quite surprised by a couple of things. One, that he named the team on the Monday. I thought maybe try and play a few games and name them on the Thursday and make Scott Robertson just guess a bit more. But he's put it out on the Monday. The All Blacks have got a week to sort of try and analyse and come up with their plans for them. But maybe that's what Rossi wants as well. You know, with him, he doesn't mind taking a gamble. And this is very much a side, especially that back line, that can play Tony Ball and can we actually, I said it today to somebody, I said that this is a side that could score 50 points, but they haven't played together, so they could easily concede 50 points as well. So it's a big gamble, but a quite an exciting one in a lot of ways.
And just one thing from just listening to what you were saying, it seems to me that Rossi is not only looking forward to this year, but I think he's looking towards 2027, isn't he? With some of those solutions.
Yeah, very much so. And I think right at the beginning of this sort of World Cup cycle, he said to us in a press conference that he knows that he's not going to win the World Cup with the same type of rugby. I mean, they squeaked home in the last World Cup final, 3 1-point victories, and great for South Africa that they did. But I think he recognises that rugby evolves, and over the next 4 years, teams are going to catch up a lot, and somebody else is probably going to have a World Cup cycle that's probably going to work for them and get to the World Cup quite strong. So to be ahead of the chasing pack's the challenge. He realizes that, we've always said, and I've actually had this conversation with a couple of quite prominent Kiwi rugby analysts and ex-players, with one or two of them, I said, John Mitchell was one of them, he said, South Africa, just if they unlock their backs, because we've got some great backs, and don't just always concentrate on the forward power that we have, well, then we could almost be unstoppable. But so I think that's almost the sort of method in the madness. And I think in a way, Rossi is the type of manager, pretty much, and the easiest way to describe it is pretty much like an Alex Ferguson. Alex Ferguson dropped David Beckham and Eric Cantona before they were done, but a year or two before they were done. Yeah. And he was quite ruthless in it. And I think we've already seen Rossi with a guy like Faf de Klerk, or even though he's over there with you guys there, you know, in New Zealand at the moment, but he's on the outer. Jordan Hendricks and Jaden Hendricks are on the outer. Yeah. And you know, there's some, I think we're probably going to see a couple more of those Springboks over the next sort of 6 to 8 months, probably fall by the wayside. And if they want to win the World Cup, they've got to be a ruthless like that.
Yeah, and he has to be. And, you know, like when I look at the South African backs, it's an absolute crime when you don't see the ball going out to Cheston and Colby, isn't it? It's just an absolute crime. And looking at what it is, like, I feel that we're probably, we've a Scott Robinson who has been very conservative with selections, is willing to make that change. I believe eventually there may have to be some tough calls made on several long-term All Blacks or where they fit in as well too. Just a reaction in and just across the papers in South Africa. Are they saying that Rassie has completely lost the plot or anything like that?
No, look, I think there's been a lot of debate this week, and understandable when you make so many changes and you put such a young backline there. But I think one thing, and I'm sure it's the same with with Ted and Steve Hansen and the same sort of thing. When you win two World Cups in a row, you sort of build up quite a bit of credit with the public. So I don't think that credit's as big as a lot of coaches would like it to be, but certainly that you get a bit more leeway than the average international coach because you won two World Cups. So I think at the moment the public sort of is intrigued and wants to see what these guys do. But if it goes wrong, I mean, like any international coach, he's going to get the criticism. And then he's lost 3 out of 4 in the rugby championship, and people are going to deal with the mutterings will start, and I think that's natural in any professional sport, and you expect that. But the one thing that excites me about this is that we've often talked about Vili Leroux being the box second playmaker, and Tony Brown was on my YouTube channel the other day talking about Apelele Fassi taking over as the second playmaker, but now they've got the potential of 3 playmakers. Damian Willems is a guy who can step his way past a bunch of us in a phone booth type thing. He's
very
got a great
good
step
player.
On him.
He's very
a great,
good.
Great youngster. And I mean, he's somebody that I think at 12, it's not the modern style big ball carrying playmaker. He's very much the old sort of style, the Dan Carter, Aaron Major type. Yeah, more that sort of playmaker, which is great. Which is great as a change-up. And Sasha Feinberg and Gomezulu, I think we all in South Africa believe that he's sort of a generational player. He's very much, I think, can achieve what the Dan Carters of this world achieved. But he's still got a way to go. He's the type of player you just want to have on the field at all times. He's going to make a lot of mistakes. He's still young. He's got a lot of confidence in the way he plays. And, I think those two together, 10 and 12, is going to be very interesting to see because they're a fabulous attacking team. On defense, that's the question marks because Damon Delenda and Jesse Krill have been almost the rocks in defense for the Springboks over the last couple of years. And now with them out of the way, a young midfield combination, Kane and Moody as well, great attacking players, but defence is where I think the All Blacks get ahead like they did in that test in Auckland. It's going to be very interesting to see how they react.
And of course, we also have a look at it. This is not the only New Zealand-South African clash at rugby, the Women's World Cup quarterfinal, and which is, I look at the South African women's side, they've made great steps to be in this quarterfinal. And I suspect that our Black Ferns, I feel more comfortable calling the Black Ferns over the South Africans in the World Cup quarterfinal than I do the All Blacks over the Springboks, even though I'm going to back the All Blacks. But just what's the reaction been like to the Women's World Cup over there? Because, in New Zealand, they're on at such different times, but people are generally enjoying it. And when it comes to quarterfinals and a World Cup, it becomes exciting.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we've got to give Swayze the Brain, the coach there. I mean, he's the ex-Lions coach that Nakam and took that Lions team to 3 Super Rugby finals. He's an exceptional coach. And he's embraced this challenge with the women box exceptionally well. And I mean, you've got to compare apples with apples. I mean, the women's rugby in South Africa is very, very young. I think this is the only second World Cup. They certainly have made great strides in that time. They were ranked, I think, number 16 before the previous World Cup. They were ranked 10th going into this World Cup. And now they've made the quarterfinals. So they're certainly on an upward trend. They've done great work. And it's great to see, the thing that also gave them so much momentum is, beating the Black Ferns. And I know it wasn't the Black Ferns' best side a couple of months ago when they were in South Africa, but just as psychologically, what New Zealand games do to South African rugby, no matter where you play them, what level, what code, all that stuff, it's a huge boost for them to actually know that they can compete against a side like the Black Ferns. They've got a huge task on Saturday. I think the Black Ferns are probably way, way favourites and probably should win quite comfortably. But I think the fact that they've got to a quarter final is amazing. The reaction from the public has been great here. And hopefully, we've got the talent in the men's game. Hopefully, this starts unlocking the talent in the women's game more. We're now seeing professional rugby league is in its second year in South Africa, so it's still very young. But if they can take the strides by the next World Cup, hopefully they can be in the top four. And I think that's what world rugby would want. I mean, we'd love a strong Springbok All Black game in every sense of every code, the sevens, the 15s, and the women's game, and obviously the age groups. I think it just makes it even better. And I there's some talk of the Black Ferns coming back next year with the greatest rivalry tour, and the Maori All Blacks also coming out at the same time. So it sounds like, I mean, we're really trying to strengthen the bonds between our two countries. And hey, as a rugby purist and a rugby traditionalist, I love it. I grew up on 1981 tour of New Zealand, the Flower Bomb tour. You can never forget that one. But I love those games, and I can't wait for next year's test if those all go ahead.
I think they will go ahead, and I think, to have proper tours back and to go out to the smaller countries and the smaller areas in South Africa, like in 1996, what John Hart did, he took a 46-man squad, which was unheard of at the time, and he took them to South Africa. And there were so many, and some of those players had so many great experiences, Brendan. And there's just one thing to keep our country bonds. Well, you just keep on supplying us Grant Elliott's, the Colin Munros, as much South Africans that want to become New Zealanders and play cricket for us. So,
don't forget Devin Conway as well. There's another one.
Oh, Devin Conway, yes. It's actually Glenn Phillips is South African. It's quite an amazing thing, I mentioned to, it might have been one of a black cap that played for South Africa, and I said, how do you feel when you play that? And he said, it's got an eerie feeling, but as they said, they've lived in New Zealand so long, they find that they are Kiwis, and it is a great rivalry. Brendan, I'll let you... Brendan, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think we're in a unique position, both countries, in that I don't think we're going to see too many Kiwis playing for South African cricket or rugby ever. But on the other way around, that's fine. But I mean, we've all experienced how many Kiwis and South Africans have played for the Northern Hemisphere sides. There always seems to be at least two or three of them in whatever side you play. So they get quite used to it. I think nowadays we live in a big world, so guys must go where they want, but it always gives a bit more banter on the field, and I know the players quite enjoy it as well.
Absolutely. Brendan, thank you so much. Hopefully we can catch up in a few months when we come towards those northern tours. Your input's been fantastic, and a lot of people are actually, first thing I got asked by one of my regulars is Brendan Nell coming back, and I said I hope to have him back for this week. So,
No, No, thank you. That's very kind. And if I can do a shout out to my YouTube channel, if the guys want to get a look at me, I do put a lot of content on there as well. It's in my name, Brendan Nell. You can just have a search, they'll find it. And yeah, you can always, at any time, I'm happy to come back anytime.
Mate, yeah. Okay, so thank you very much.
And that was Brendan. Now, next up, we have the panel, which is Wellington's Finest, Macbeth and Davis.
I met her in a flat in Narrow Valley. She said, "This party's slack, let's watch the telly." She drank her Lion Brown and said, "I'm new in town. I think the weather's crap." I said, "You'd come around." Everybody does, you know. You can't beat Wellington on a good day, even a bad day too. You can't beat Wellington, it's a cliche, but nonetheless it's true. She said she worked in town, but I forgot where. The Ministry of Health or Social Welfare. We went to her abode, Tinakori Road. Her flatmate was in bed, we used his stereo. You can't beat Wellington on a good day or even a bad day too. You can't beat Wellington, it's a cliche, but nonetheless it's true. Even a bad day too. You can't beat Wellington, it's a cliche, but nonetheless it's true. I took her to the park to watch the lions. I said, "Let's have a beer." She said, "You're buying." I held her by the hand beneath the Millard stand. She said, "Are these guys good?" I said, "You better understand, baby, it's like this. You can't beat Wellington on a good day or even a bad day."
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. You can't beat Wellington on a good day. Actually, a bloody good song. And of course, you can't beat it on a test day. And here to join us on line one, a bit of a legend in Wellington. He claims to have a lot to do with the song. The one and only Miles Davis, good morning to you, mate.
I had nothing to do with the song, but I heartily agree with its sentiment, apart from maybe nowadays down at the Central City, which is probably why our fellow guest today moved up to the Company Coast.
Yeah, well, I lied to Mr. Macbeth, the one and only John Macbeth. G'day, John. How are you, mate?
I'm good, Eamon. Nice to hear your voice, Miles. And yes, you're right, actually. One of the reasons we love Wellington, absolutely, but we found when we moved up the coast, the wind wasn't quite so noticeable. So it's been worthwhile making the shift. Although I do miss keeping in contact with people in Wellington, which I hoped I'd do regularly, but you know what it's like, Miles. You sort of drift away.
I can't remember the last time you rang me, John.
And you've obviously lost my phone number.
Yeah, exactly.
I can pass all your numbers to each other. You can have a wee coffee day.
All right. No,
we've bored each other enough in the past, that's all
yeah,
right.
Well, thank goodness I don't join you as I bore the both of you. Hey, yeah. big weekend in Wellington, and it always is a great weekend. I love Wellington CBD on Test Match Day. It's fantastic. You walk around the city, it just has a real good buzz. But, you know, this test, while the All Blacks kept Fortress Eden Park undefeated, I just think this test is really, I still think it's a tough one to call. I'm going to start it off a few, Miles.
Yeah, it is. I suppose, you know, Eden Park's got that mystique about it and that magnificent 31-year, you know, undefeated record. Wellington's probably the opposite. It's a bit of a Jonah sort of ground for the All Blacks, and there wouldn't be many of those around the world in the last 100-odd years. You'd think that the South Africans are going to respond. They're not going to be happy with the loss. they're gonna try and cut out their mistakes. Mind you, the All Blacks made a few as well, so they'll be the same. I just think I'm probably anticipating this one even more than I did the last one. I had the All Blacks to win that last week, but I just haven't got a clue who's going to win tonight. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how fast old Mr. Carter on the wing is.
John, if he gets an opportunity.
Yeah, well, this weather could dictate. What's your feelings on the game there, John?
Oh, I'm a bit like Miles. I can't really pick this one. The Springboks were, I thought, disappointing last week. And the fact that they made so many errors and have now pretty much changed their entire back line, apart from a couple, shows that, you know, they weren't happy with the way things went either. But I just believe that this All Black team will have gained so much from that. It's just a matter of, and Miles alluded to it, can they keep on top of South Africa, who are a mighty team without doubt. And, getting that win at Eden Park was wonderful. I think the anticipation for this is possibly even more so. Can the All Blacks continue, or are they going to falter under the Wellington Sky Stadium? I just think bring back Athletic Park, Miles, and just, you know, go back there and play it. You can't because it's a retirement village.
Yeah, well, Miles is looking to book in there, John.
Macbeth will be in there before I am, but I have reserved a room next to his. And I used to, I worked for the Wellington Rugby Union, over 30 years ago now, and it was my sort of domicile for a year. And I just, my father-in-law, my late father-in-law, who passed away, was the first man to play 100 games for Wellington. He played there. He introduced me to the place when I first came over. And the Millard Stand, and just, I mean, it was an old school ground, but it had atmosphere, atmosphere, and I miss it terribly.
Yeah, and particularly the odour from those concrete toilets, Miles.
Well,
I know.
What I meant, atmosphere, John.
Yeah, atmosphere. But I think we've got, I think it's possibly been brave by Robertson, I'm not sure. Having won the first one, I suppose he felt he could make one or two subtle changes, bringing, and I must work out, can someone tell me whether it's Leroy, as I keep hearing, or Leroy? I'm hopefully Carter will let us know exactly how it's spelled, otherwise, how pronounced, otherwise he'll go through the rest of his career getting various pronunciations. But I think it's great that he's encouraged this young man who's there on form, and superseding the likes of Caleb Clark, who's been there and done it. I think it shows a bit of, great confidence in some of the newer players who are performing well on the domestic front. So I'm looking forward to this, really looking forward to it. And I think interesting too, Miles, you possibly agree that having Richie McCaw involved and Wayne Smith shows that, unlike sometimes in previous generations of coaches, not just in rugby either, there's often been a reluctance to bring in our superstars to help. So I'm pleased that Robertson and his crew have not been reluctant to bring in those people who have shown how knowledgeable they are in the game. So I think that's great.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly there, John. And I remember, it reminds me a bit of Dave Rennie, actually. In 2012, I went down to interview him for Sky, and when he just took over at the Chiefs. And he was talking about the culture there, and he was talking. I said, how on earth did you get Wayne Smith on board? And he brought him and various other, Tom Coventry and other guys that came in. And he said that he'd just rung Wayne Smith to ask about a few players. And then, what are you up to? And he'd moved back to Potaru because his dad wasn't well and he was helping him out. And he said, well, do you fancy coming along and giving us a hand? Now, can you imagine being able to get someone like Wayne Smith to just come along and give you a hand? One thing I will point out, I mean, I love Razor. I've got to say, I've been a fan of his for a long time and I like him as an individual. But both those guys you mentioned are Cantabs. So,
Here
we go.
Yeah, they've got to have some black marks against them, eh?
Oh, here we go. The Cantab hating begins from an export from the UK and a South Cantabrian who lives up in the Kapiti Coast. Anyway, hey, just one thing, guys, and I'm looking at this. Not only do we have the All Blacks Springboks, but earlier on, I just don't know whether the NRL doesn't give a brass monkey about New Zealand Rugby League, but we've got the Warriors versus the Panthers. Now, I don't know whether it's something to whether Peter Volandis, who's a very smart man, is going to look at TV ratings versus the All Blacks to see how good, how big the following is in New Zealand Rugby League. Your thoughts, guys, starting off with you, John.
You mean the clash of games?
Yep.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Why would you really, if I'm steeped in rugby leagues and my team is playing, do I need to worry about what other codes are doing? I think it would almost be a backlash if they said, oh, look, we're going to change the time because the All Blacks are playing at that stage. People would be saying, so you're conceding that rugby is more popular? Oh, I don't know, really. I don't know whether there's much they could do about it anyway. The schedule is made up, I would imagine, quite a way in advance. I'll be sitting there, and I'm not going to the game tonight, unfortunately, but I'll be choosing the warmth and comfort of home, so I'll have the remote control on the hand and I'll be flicking across just to see what the other codes are doing.
Miles.
Yeah, I mean, why on earth would they give the monkeys or even look out what other sports are doing? You know, like, their focus is rugby. They don't owe anything to rugby union. I don't think it's even let's bung it on so we can stuff them up. They want more people in the ground. They want more people watching it. You know, if that was the case, they definitely have moved it. They just, as John said, they probably planned it ages ago, and that's just the way it is. I mean, what are they going to do? Oh, Taylor Swift's doing a live gig on television. Let's move the game till next week. You know, it's just, there's loads of distractions nowadays. And
as
John says, if you want to watch it, you can watch it. And people can record one game as well nowadays. They don't have to or watch it delayed. You know, it's not really an issue now, and I think it's just been made up, probably by the media, just made it up for something to do.
Yeah, well,
those bloody media, surely.
Oh, so they should be shot, John.
Oh, they shouldn't, you know.
Oh, God, you still... talking about the media hype or not, but imagine if you're the media person at New Zealand Netball at the moment. This is an absolute publicity disaster. They look amateurish, and, you know, it's just shocking how this has been played out in the public eye. Starting off with you, Miles.
Yeah, it's an absolute joke. And I was just thinking, I can't imagine this sort of thing or happening in this way when Raelene Castle was in charge at Netball New Zealand. And we see this a lot more in sport nowadays, don't we? You remember we had it with the Black Ferns moaning because, you know, someone was mean to them and the hooker got dropped and she didn't think she'd be dropped. We've had legal cases taken if you weren't picked to go to the Olympics. And now, probably, arguably, I put it up there, and I've got a lot of time for Dame Nolene, one of the best coaches of any code that this country has had. Now, you can talk to, Anna Langman was one, there's a few others that you could talk to who played under her, and all of them got nothing but good. So she's hard, but she's fair. She improves everyone's games. She gives people the opportunity to give their thoughts on it, and, you know, she's open to discussion. And it looks to me as if she's just got a few pampered, spoiled little things. Oh, she's been mean to me. A high performance, you go there and you expect to have your pillows plumped for you. And the way that Netball New Zealand have handled it, you know, oh, there's nothing wrong, we're just standing. Who stands a coach down in front of one of their major sort of series just coming up? You know, if there's rationale behind it. What I would have done, any one of them complained, I'd stand them down and say, sod it, we're about the result. We're just going to play people who want to play.
John.
And how do they fix this? You know, there are several issues here, aren't there? A, we don't know, or we didn't know, anything that was amiss or what the reason was initially. It's been kept quiet, and so all the speculation, and it seems to be, and all we're hearing, and you'll be like me, Miles, you're just going on what you've heard and read, is that it is a player situation, players dissatisfied or a bit sensitive about the way the coaching is being done. And I think that's really, really sad if that is the case. Most people, if that is the case, and what we're hearing is, would be absolutely aghast that it's a player power thing where we don't like what the coach is doing. If that's the case, and again, you know, it's purely just what people are saying in the background, that's a sad situation, but should have been sorted out without the coach being stood down. You're absolutely right. One of the best coaches New Zealand's had in any sport, and with huge respect for around the world, and particularly with those she played with and coached previously, to be stood down, it's, you know, I think it's unprecedented. And the backlash will be huge.
I'm just going to say this. This is a thing that really I can't understand. This happened over 6 months ago, and they've let it fester. Then 12 days beforehand, this has it's been handled poorly. And I actually feel sorry for Dame Nolan. If it was me, I'd tell him to, you know, where to stick their job.
I wouldn't be surprised if she does do that. You know, she's deserving of better treatment, of more respect. And one thing I've got to say is I said Anna Langman. I was getting confused between Anna Stanley and Laura Langman. But both of them probably would support her. And I wouldn't be surprised if she puts her two fingers up and tells them where to go.
Well, that's what I meant when I said, you know, where does it go from here? What's the solution? One, there's going to be any winner out of this? I don't think there'll be a winner anywhere. And how easy would it be now for the two parties to get back together and work happily? It just seems to be almost an impossible situation.
Absolutely. Well, John, a big clash for you. It's the battle of the Mid and the South Canterbury's. In the Heartland Championship.
Oh, South Canterbury, who are they playing?
Mid-Canterbury.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm pleased
Ash Vegas versus the Metropolis of Timaru.
Yeah. I was just reading in the Post today, and there was a photo of Ken Milne holding the Ranfurly Shield up in 1974, so that sort of 50 years since, and there was all that talk about Tasman, which is sort of what Marlborough was at the time. And now we get down to... I think I mentioned to you, I'm not sure, Eamon, but there was an ex-All Black by the name of Dennis Cameron who passed away a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
He toured in 1960 with the All Blacks. He played for Mid-Canterbury. And my first recollection of a big rugby match was the combined South Canterbury, Mid-Canterbury, North Otago team playing against the Lions in 1959 at Fraser Park in Timaru. So there's always been this fierce rivalry because even back then there was a mix of selectors to pick the Hannon Shield team.
Yep.
And there was so much argument, you know, about who had been left out and who should have been played and, you know, there was really great rivalry, and that still continues. Mid and South Canterbury. South Canterbury have won most of those games in recent years, so coming from there, I'm just, of course, my green and black colours are out.
Who has got a Hannon Shield at the moment? I've had the pleasure of holding it. I think I got it when South Canterbury had it, when I was down in Timaru. But I was just wondering
still
who's
South Canterbury.
It at the moment.
Still South Canterbury.
Yeah, they had a remarkable trot of being unbeaten in the Heartland and winning the title, I think, 3 years in a row. They beat Whanganui last week, I think, was their most recent game. So, yeah, there'll be a few there watching that and then heading off somewhere to watch the test.
Absolutely. Miles, what was your thoughts on the All Whites versus the Socceroos? Hello?
He was shocked into silence, Eamon.
We've just lost him. Anyway, we'll keep talking.
There were two fantastic games by the All Whites, you know, conceding that late goal on the first one and then with Chris Wood scoring first up in the second. And, you know, as so many observers said, really, the All Whites played as well, if not better, than Australia, and the results were, you know, not accurate. So good workout for them, without doubt, and they'll have gained a lot of confidence.
Sorry, John, I'm just trying to get Miles.
He's not worth worrying about.
Yeah, well, you know what he's like. Okay, mate, we'll put you back on. Yep, I didn't. I put you there.
Good.
Anyway, Miles, we were going to talk about the All Whites. You claimed that I chopped you off, which I didn't. Which I didn't. But what was your thoughts on the All Whites?
I thought the first game they looked pretty good up until the last quarter of an hour where they, whether it was tactics or just the mentality that they sort of sat back a little bit and looked like they were happy for the draw and got undone. They were pretty outclassed, I thought, in the second leg. But mean, the whole, I mean, we can say one thing, that there's the standard of New Zealand football's going up. You've got a lot more players going and playing in Europe. The opportunities that the Phoenix and now Auckland FC opening up for them. They're going to play in universities and sides in the MLS. So there's a lot more exposure and improving their game. But the same could be said of the Aussies. So, you know, just the standard of football generally around the world is slowly going up and up. And it's a question of whether you can catch up or whether you have a vintage year where you get, you know, more than a Chris Wood. You get maybe a Wynton Roofer and a Ryan Nelson all playing at the same time. And if you can get that, you can see New Zealand really advance. But the thing is, they're going to get more experience because with 48 teams qualifying for a World Cup now, which is farcical, you're going to qualify nearly every time.
Yeah. You're right too. I think, you know, you mentioned Roofer, where, you know, while the rest of the New Zealand team was pretty good at the time, he stood out alone. Chris Wood stands there. It's a little bit like the Richard Hadlee scenario, wasn't it? You know, getting more players up to that highest level. And as you said, we've got so many playing overseas that the experience they're gaining, and if they can all bring it back to New Zealand and, you know, we can combine well and get enough games when they're all available, it's exciting times, I think, for New Zealand football.
You know what, I looked at that game and it was good to see a crowd on a Tuesday out at Go Media, or used to be known as Mount Smart, 18,000 on a cold, miserable night in Auckland where traffic is absolutely crap. But I'm just going to say this, the only thing that concerns me with the All Whites, if Chris Wood's not there, we don't look as competitive.
Yeah, I know, but that's, you know, that's the nature of the beast, which I was saying. You know, you need to get a little bit more depth. There's depth of the medium-type players, but there's not depth in superstars, and that's probably going to be around for a while.
Just on medium and mediocre, who's West Ham got this week, Miles?
Tottenham. So, yeah, we're fired up. We actually won last time out, so and I think it's the first time that Chris Wood hadn't scored against us, because no matter who he's playing for, he scores Burnley, Leeds, Leicester, whoever it is, he scores against us. So
yeah, well,
I was quite pleased with that.
Yeah, well, our mob's got the other mob across in Manchester, and I'm picking a draw because the TAB is paying $4, and it might be well worth putting $20 on. Just some. Okay, we'll just come to the end part. What else are you looking forward to in the sporty weekend, John McBeth?
Well, the Black Ferns, of course, I'm looking forward to our women carrying on with their fine form. To me, the Women's World Cup looks to be England and then the rest. I mean, there's some teams that are close to England, but they are just riding such a crest at the moment. So I'm pleased we've avoided them so far. This is a big game for them against South Africa, but there's no doubt there's been vast improvement with this women's rugby team in the last few months, 6 months or so, if they can remain injury-free, you know, and take those opportunities, then they should beat South Africa. But it's what lies ahead that really scares me, and I'd be thrilled if New Zealand got to the final. They've got the potential to, but there's a... You know, it's tough games ahead for them. I'm just enjoying it. I'm enjoying watching some of the women's rugby without doubt. It's just improved so much, yeah.
What's been your thoughts on the Women's World Cup? Just wrapping it up there,
yeah,
Miles.
I'm with John. I mean, there's still the odd blowout, but you get that in the Men's World Cup. You know, you're still trying to bring the game along to be a truly international sport, so you're always going to have the weaker sides, but they're only going to get better and better. I mean, England are, I think it's 31 games on the trot now, they're undefeated. The Black Ferns, like John said, it wasn't that long ago where they went through that real slump. The French beat them twice, England gave them a good pounding, but they've really turned that form around, and I think that if there's one team that could turn upset England, I think it's the Black Ferns. I think they've got the wherewithal. They've got a lot of pace on the outside, and they like spinning the ball. And what I enjoy about women's rugby is the fact that they do give it a go.
Yep.
You know, they actually run the ball a hell of a lot more, and it can be really entertaining to watch. And I think it's going to be an England Black Ferns final. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we don't get my side, the white-wearing side, don't get a player sent off early in the game that totally totally bloody changes the complexion of it.
On that note, guys, we'll wrap it up there. I have to say, yep, I'd have to agree with you guys on the women's rugby. It's actually been great to watch. And guess what? They can actually draw and pass. So some of the men's rugby sides should actually look at that. We'll call it there. Miles, thank you so much. And apologies to whatever happened with our phone system.
Yeah, no problem at all, mate. Lovely to talk to you, John. Hear your dulcet.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
And John all McBeth, right. Thanks so much.
Got my number.
See you guys. Bye.
Cheers, Amy. Righto.
That's us done.